Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps. On live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnis Training proudly present No Borders, No Race, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to the 150th episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo. 150 episodes, yes, and for this special occasion, we're going full-blown anime with discussions regarding a few of this fall season's newest and returning favorites. But for something like this, I need a little help. So joining me today are a couple of our buddies and recurring guests. First, he is one half of the Winter Twin Duo over at Wicked Anime, the stupid awesome analyst, Jonathan Fleming.
Congratulations on 150 birthdays.
Yay. Birthdays.
150 years old.
I'm so old. And second, she claims to be a real-life Kaya Saranuma from Kiss Him, Not Me, the host of 42's Anime Reviews, and one Lolita extraordinaire, Miss 42 Believer, Sarah Barry.
I'm laughing so hard right now because it's not even a lie. It's not even a lie. I am here.
Wait.
Dude, that show's great.
That show's great, but that makes me concerned because that means you possibly ship real people in real life.
Okay. I don't go that far.
All right, cool. So Jonathan and I can breathe a sigh of relief on that.
Yeah, I think you could definitely. That yeah, not even close. No, I just like the fictional characters.
Okay,
twin says this isn't real.
Yeah, no, and it's not nearly as sexy in real life.
Right.
But before we dive into the actual anime discussion, something big finally premiered, the Ghost in the Shell live action trailer.
Yeah. Hollywood it all over that thing.
It did Hollywood.
And you know what? Yeah. The visuals are stunning, but mm-hmm. the story that I got out of the trailer was just so crappy. Like I loved the visuals and you can see those Facebook videos that come out, it's like, oh, compare the anime side by side with the trailer, and
yeah,
they are exactly the same. But when you listen to the dialogue and everything, and Motoko Kusanagi trying to figure out quote unquote who she is like, that was never Ghost in the Shell. Motoko Kusanagi always knew what she was doing when she became a ghost or when she got a shell. It was like, Or was that a thing?
No, that wasn't Standalone Complex.
It was?
Yeah, dude. It played like that. It was in the second half of the first season, I believe. It was during the Laughing Man aspect of it. Huh. Because that's when she found out she had a connection to the Laughing Man.
I honestly don't even remember that.
This actually plays a little bit with the concept of who the Major really is. And I do think that they even touched a bit about it. It was just for a smidge of the time, but in the first movie, they touched about her, like, identity in sorts.
Right.
So, see, For me, when I was like seeing other people's reactions to it, especially on Twitter, someone, and I know like some of those scenes are identical, like visually, but stylistically they aren't. Which was what I thought was interesting that other people were pointing out. Like the scene where she's in the room and there's the city in the background. If you compare the scene from the movie and the original, you can tell that like the lighting and everything is completely stylistically different, which is what the person, one of my people I follow on Andy's Twitter, DigiBro, he was pointing that out. That they're just really, they might be copying it, but they lost the original style that made the scene impactful in the first place.
Well, yeah, that's definitely something DigiBro could point out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the whole aspect of going from live action to animated. And whenever you transition from one to another, you are going to lose something from the original.
Yeah, but if you're losing the how iconic the original was and how impactful it was, I don't think what you're left with is anything good.
All right, I can kind of understand that, but for me personally, I liked the trailer. I personally believe that there is potential that it could be good, that maybe they might not have screwed up this one.
Whereas, I agree.
There is still the chance that they might have messed it up, but it feels like it's less likely, me personally, that they didn't screw up this adaptation. Like, they did their homework. They knew that if this bombs, if this fails, you will never see another, like, attempt at doing a live-action anime.
It's gonna get Wii U butts in seats.
Yeah. Because here's what I want to bring up, because the live-action Ghost in the Shell movie is going to be premiering during Anime Boston Weekend. Where we're all gonna be together.
Okay.
Ooh.
So I'm thinking, because a lot of films these days, they have the early Thursday screenings. A part of me thinks that when we're all together for Anime Boston 2017, you guys, maybe the manga gamer people, I'm thinking maybe we go over to the Boston Common AMC and watch it and get our full opinion on it right before Anime Boston actually starts.
Yeah. Kick off the weekend with some disappointment. That sounds good.
I mean, it can only go up from there, right?
Right. Yeah, it could go up from there. And if it winds up being a great movie, hey, it's going to be an uphill sort of time, you know?
Yeah, true.
So yeah, Ghost of the Shell FX trailer premiered. I liked it. These two are kind of about it.
I want it to do well. I sincerely want it to do well, but I just have my reservations.
Yeah, I'm hoping it does well so that maybe somebody will be like, oh, maybe we can fork over the $500 million for the Cowboy Bebop script. But, I'm so cautious about it in the same way that I'm cautious about the live-action Full Metal Alchemist trailer that just released.
That's right. And they really didn't show too much from that trailer. That makes me a little bit worried.
But they did show how good at CG Japan is getting.
Yeah, they are getting a lot better with that, that's for sure.
So, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to Ghost in the Shell, but I'm not thrilled. Like, again, if you've listened to our podcast, you've heard our reservations about Scarlett Johansson as well. There's been very few things that we've actually enjoyed her in. But I like Scarlett Johansson as a person, but not, like, I haven't necessarily liked all the movies she's been in.
I can understand that. For me personally, like, I've always appreciated Scarlett Johansson when she's like in an independent movie, like when she did like Lost in Translation.
That's the one that I was thinking of. that was like, yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad.
Or when she did those Woody Allen movies like Match Point and Scoop, I thought she was really good in those. But when it comes to action movies, like, it could be very hit and miss with her. But I feel like with her in the role of Ghost of the Shell, when she did the introduction, like, you could tell, like, this was a really important role for her. Like, you knew that she was probably going to try her hardest to capture the major in the same way that the anime did.
Ironically, she's really good at, and pun intended, she's good at playing a shell of a person Like, because if you think about all the characters that she's ever played, she's like played these deadpan, dead inside kind of one note characters, which is probably kind of what turned me off to her. But Lost in Translation was the perfect role for her in that. Black Widow has never sat well with me because, you know, a character that's supposed to be a little bit more full of life, she's just never had the right expression for it.
Okay, and I can totally respect your opinion on that one. Because I can kind of see that in some of the things that she's done. Like, what was that movie that she was in that movie, The Island, the one that Michael Bay did, that she was just terrible.
Oh, well, that, no. That whole movie was just awful. So that doesn't really help. But, like, even I like Ewan McGregor movies, but I was like, Ewan McGregor was terrible in that movie. Yeah. You get fed a crappy script, and the actors can take it and do what they can with what they're given, but, you know, they can only do so much.
Yeah, there's a point, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hey, but at least we're now getting Ewan McGregor in the Trainspotting sequel, so all good things.
Yeah.
All right, so, yes, trailers, but let's get into the meat of this whole discussion. We have 4 sports anime to talk about on this show, which make up
exclamation cast.
Yes, exclamation cast, because there are 15 exclamation points in the titles of these shows in total. More sports talk in this episode than in probably all the past 149 episodes of No Borders, No Race combined.
Yeah, if your listeners don't like sports anime, maybe this isn't the podcast for you today.
No, rather, if they don't like sports anime, I really hope that they like otaku banter. Yes.
This will be
filled. We'll provide that.
Yeah, this episode will be filled with it. But before we dive into this discussion, we will start off with the playlist, which is going to be all anime related.
I got a sneak preview of the playlist, and it is amazing.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yep, Sarah has gotten a sneak peek as well. But as always, if you like what you hear and you want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, Libazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And while we are on the subject of Ghost in the Shell, we're going to open up this episode with the end theme, the first end theme to Standalone Complex. With vocal accompaniment by Scott Matthew, here is Yoko Kanno with Lithium Flower.
She's so cold and human. It's something humans do. She stays so golden and solo. She's so number 9. She's incredible math. Just incredible math. And is she really human? She's just a something new. Awaken lithium flower just about to bloom. I'll smell lithium now. Smelling lithium now. How is she when she doesn't sound?
heartbeat, tired of feeling never enough. I close my eyes and tell myself that my dreams will come true. There'll be no more darkness when you believe in yourself. You are unstoppable. Where your destiny lies, dancing on the blade, you set my heart on fire. Don't stop us now, the moment of truth. We were born to make history. We'll make it happen, we'll turn it around. Yes, we were born to make history. Born to make history. Born to make history. Don't stop us now, the moment of truth. We were born to make history. We'll make it happen, we'll turn it around. Yes, we were born to make history. Can you hear my heartbeat? I've got a feeling it's never too late. I close my eyes and see myself, how my dreams will come true. There'll be no more darkness when you believe in yourself. You are unstoppable. Where your destiny lies, dancing on the blade, you set my heart on fire. Don't stop us now, the moment of truth. We were born to make history. We'll make it happen, we'll turn it around. Yes, we were born to make history.
Probably one of the best opening themes of this year. That was Dean Fujioka with History Maker, which you can hear every week on the first anime that we're going to be talking about, which is Yuri on Ice.
Yaoi on Ice!
Toot toot! Here comes the big giant ship that's docking up onto Yuri on Ice!
I just want to say that the fact that Yuri on Ice turned out to be the gayest show this year just makes me so happy on so many levels. Thank you very much. And if any of you out there have not seen it, you can go to crunchyroll.com/42believer and get a free trial. And that will apply to basically all the anime we're talking about today, because I'm pretty sure they're all on Crunchyroll, right?
Yep, all of them are on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, so please go watch them, because, yeah, how are you guys liking it? Because you guys know that I am loving it, but how are you guys liking it?
I actually really, really like it.
It's actually fantastic. Like, I know we were making fun of it. We were making fun of this show just from the title alone. But then when we started watching it, I'm like, I can't make fun of this anymore. This is actually really good.
Oh, no. I'm still making fun of it.
We're making fun of it for different reasons, but we can't make fun of it because it's because of the title.
Yep.
And you can't make fun of it for being bad because it's not bad.
No, it is not bad. Now,
really good characters. I love the script in the show. Mm-hmm. Like, Victor is one of the funniest characters this season, I think. Just watching him interact, it's almost as if he's got this unhuman thing about him because of the way that he acts as a foreigner in a foreign country, but like still has these different cultural aspects to his character.
Yeah. So I feel like, that, like the one when Yuri was late and he like goes down and he's like, oh, Japanese dogeza.
Yeah. Or just the way that he goes, hi, you know, is just it, when it pops up, it's so random and it catches you off guard. It's really funny.
It's more of like his reaction to everything. This is ramen. Oh my god, this is delicious. Oh, this is hot spring. Oh, this is nice and comfy. Hey, Yuri, have you seen my penis lately?
Yeah, right.
There was someone had a really good theory on why they thought that Yuri and Victor had already kissed off screen before that kiss, which I thought was a pretty good theory.
All right, let's hear it.
So essentially, when they're down in the because okay, spoilers, in episode 7 of Yuri on Ice, it's heavily implied that they kissed, even though you don't actually see it. But when they're down in the basement before that happens, there someone was pointing out that Victor like even says, "Should I kiss you?" And Yuri says, "No, that's not that." But he wasn't surprised that Victor would suggest something like that. But he said, no, that's not right. That's not what I need right now. I need you to listen to what I... This is what I need from you. I need you to stand by my side.
Yeah.
When I had heard that, I thought I had kind of just shaken it off as kind of like, oh, yeah, he's messing with him sort of thing. Like, in the way that he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I could kind of see that as well, too. But I do like Sarah's or whoever's theory that was... much better, because I feel like that does add to more of the character development that Yuri and Ice has been showcasing.
One question that I do have, though, is Yuri actually gay? I mean, like, it's never really established. I don't think he knows either. You know what I mean?
Like, I'm thinking he might
I mean,
be more...
I don't know he knows either, but that one speech he gave where his theme was love.
I feel like there is a possibility that he could be, my opinion is he could be bisexual, that he could be swinging both ways, and like this is like his first awakening to someone of the same sex that he is starting to feel a lot of love for.
Yeah. I think one of the things that they're doing with the show is that they're just covering a lot of taboos that Japan still has. And I think that's not a bad thing, you know.
Well, not only that, someone else, I've been like looking at so many things on Tumblr and Twitter about Yuri on Ice because I've been in love with it. And someone was mentioning that the ice skating community as a whole, they were saying that it's been historically pretty homophobic. If you are an ice skater, Johnny Weir was given intentionally lower scores by judges because they didn't like how flamboyant he was on and off the ice.
Huh.
So they were saying that for Yuri on Ice to do this in a sport that is known to just be very, very homophobic, to have anything even close to this, that it was pretty groundbreaking, not only for Japan, but just the international ice skating community at large.
Yeah.
Which
is weird because...
That is weird. That's what I was just thinking. It was like, really? There's homophobia in ice skating?
Yeah.
That's like the last place I would expect there to be homophobia.
It is. It's one of the most, like, speaking from an outward standing, it's a very feminine sport. And it's like ballet, you know, in the same way that when you see people doing ballet on stage and males on stage, the way that the body moves and the way that you need to flow in the way, like, because men and women are structured differently in the way that they move, and females are just able to move easier. Like, it's just biologically they're able to move in the ways that they do. And when men do it, it actually touches on the uncanny valley, because you're seeing a human move in this case, a male human move in the way that a male human doesn't typically move. And so your brain kind of says there's something off about this, and that's why it's so noticeable. And the same thing with ballet, too. Ballet and figure skating. Little brain stench for you guys there.
But you would think that for two sorts of forms of art, like ballet and figure skating, two forms of art that have been around for centuries and have had both genders participating in it, be it for competition or just for fun, that you would think that this whole aspect would be, like, people wouldn't mind. People wouldn't notice that sort of thing because it's been around for such a long time with both genders doing such a thing.
But see, it wasn't until, like, the turn of the 19th century that women started ice skating. It was a man's sport before that.
Interesting.
Wow.
It was about, you know, it was a way for wealthy men to be like showing off their gracefulness and how much money they had and spare time that they had, that they could practice and do all of these cool tricks.
I'm like now picturing like these men with big bushy mustaches and top hats doing fisticuffs on the ice. It's the 1910s. Bully, I say, bully, look at me doing this figure-eight. Bully, I say, bully.
Yeah. But yeah, no, if you look up about Johnny Weir, you can see there's history of there was a commenter who said that, yeah, he should get better, but he's too controversial, so the judges give him lower scores.
That's so weird.
Even if he skated a technically perfect program.
Yeah. Honestly, I never would have guessed that in a million years.
While we're on the flamboyant subject, I love the fact that the most flamboyant skater that's on Yuri on Ice is, like, the straightest dude that's being showcased. The one who's skating because his girlfriend dumped him.
Oh, yeah.
He started crying, and I was like, really? I was like everyone else. I was like, dude, calm down.
No, I just love the shot of his ex, like, in the crowd, just putting the thumbs down, like, death.
Yeah. And how off-putting is that Swiss guy? Like every time he goes on to the ice, it is just for me not even whether or not it's like his personality is just so off-putting. I don't know what it is about him, but he's like a horror character.
He's like Satoshi Kon like character.
It's like watching Buffalo Bill like skate on the ice. Like,
dude, I think that thought crossed my mind during his first skating, like his first skate, like the first time I watched it. He reminds me so much of "You wanna fuck me? I'll fuck me."
It puts the lotion on its skin.
Unless it gets the hose again.
Oh. But no, I am absolutely loving Yuri on Ice, 100%. And it's just proof that just because they're gay doesn't mean the story is bad. So just
have you seen
that
the size
there.
Of their hands?
They're normal sized. They're regular size. And I want to actually make a point that this fall season alone, we've seen three different couplings. Maybe one of them's not official yet of like of LGBT that have been presented in a really good light. I mean, we have Victor and Yuri on Yuri and Ice. We have Izetta and Fine in Izetta the Last Witch. And we have Sister Nana in Winter Prison from Magical Girl Raising Project.
And I'd also like to pretty much heavily imply that I'm pretty sure Kokona and Paprika have something going on from Flip Flappers.
Oh, I love that show.
I still haven't started watching that yet. But
Episode 2 is a Mad Max parody.
All right, now I have to... God damn it, now I have to watch 16 anime this season.
Now, I'm assuming that the one that you can't confirm yet is Izetta and Fine, right?
Yeah. But I do think that the episode that aired, not this past week, but the previous week, when they're in bed and they're holding hands and they're looking at each other, I feel like that there's something that's deeply implied there.
Oh, have I not? I don't think I've seen that episode. Huh. I think that's the episode that I'm about to watch.
Oh, okay.
You know what wasn't heavily implied? It was just outright stated. The freaking kiss in Kiss Him, Not Me between Nisha and Kai. Freaking Yuri OTP.
Well, but she backtracked on that in the episode right after that.
Right. But we all know that was a lie.
It totally was, but it she totally backtracked on.
I mean,
she did. Doesn't mean they're less of an OTP.
Right. And, you know, Sarah and I have read the manga. We know what might happen, what might not happen. But let's just say that she is still in the running as part of her, I don't want to say harem, unofficial harem. What would you call it, Sarah?
It's a harem.
You would call it a harem?
No, it's
a harem, and one of them's a girl.
Otome.
Okay. Oh, all right. Yes.
Yeah, reverse harem's called an otome. Mm-hmm.
Actually, I wanted to bring up one other thing about Yuri on Ice, and you did speak a little bit about the writing aspect, but one of the things that I've been reading about is how deep the writing goes into preparing for a series like Yuri on Ice. One of the best examples is, so you know how there's this Thai skater, the Fitchet, and yep. he's skating to these songs from a film that doesn't exist called
yep.
The Skate, that was it, The King of the Skater or The Skater,
skater
and the King?
Skater and I.
The Skater and the King.
King and the Skater.
The King and the Skater. Apparently, series co-creator Mitsuo Kobo wrote an entire plotline to this film that is mentioned briefly. Like, there's a legit 2-page treatment for it. And I read it. I kind of want to see it.
Huh.
Like, I want to see him do, like, this as a spinoff.
Maybe he will.
Maybe. Maybe they will.
I hope so. That would be amazing. I mean, so I just have to say that it's definitely because of Free that Yuri on Ice was greenlit.
Is that speculation or do you know that for a fact?
Speculation, yeah. But I'm like 90% sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you wouldn't have seen a show like this. Before Free was made, anything that was vaguely like really female like targeted, they didn't give it that good of a budget. Like Yaoi in the past has always gotten the shittiest budgets ever.
Well, what's the one that just aired this past year called, what was it, Super Lovers?
Yeah, but Super Lovers is shit.
Really? I just
Super
saw a
Lovers
picture.
Super Lovers is pedo. It's like Shota.
Okay. Never mind. I retract my statement.
You can just ask the title of the show, Super Lovers. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I'm so ingrained into how Yaoi has evolved as like a subculture within anime that seeing Free come out then just opened the floodgates for really high budget productions targeted mainly at females because they were like, well, females will actually buy all the figures and shit that the male otakus do, so let's make stuff for them too.
Yuri on Ice would make great figures.
They're making Nendoroids of it.
I'm not talking about Nendoroids. I mean, Nendoroids would be great, but figures. I'm talking about PVC figures. They
yes.
would be amazing.
Yeah. That would be really cool.
The posing that you could do, you could make a whole series sets of an ice rink that you could link together in the same way that they have the staircase versions of the Love Live stuff. I mean, oh man, it'd
be
so good.
Cool. Yeah.
Yuri on Ice now, action figures.
There.
Yeah. Now, speaking of budget, is one thing that I'm surprised that we haven't touched on yet because it's one of the most important things about anime, which is the animation.
I think there's some rotoscoping going on for that.
Oh, most certainly. If not, it's. I don't think it's. Well, it could be rotoscoping, but I don't think it's full on rotoscoping because the opening of the show is rotoscoped. That's
yes.
absolutely rotoscoped. But what they're actually doing on the ice is not necessarily rotoscoped, but it's most certainly heavily referenced.
Yeah, I saw a video where they showed like a GIF of how they turned it into. They showed the ice skater skating and how they turned it into the actual clip in the show.
Did they actually draw over the video?
Not frame by frame. They like did. They would just do like brief sketches of just the different shapes the body would be in at different
okay.
points in time, and then they would fill it in themselves later.
Yeah. Okay. So that's not rotoscoping. Yeah. I would say that the opening, the intro to the show where they're playing History Maker, that is probably rotoscoped because
I think
is
so too.
Way too fluid, and the sketch lines that they draw it in, which looks really nice. But it's not perfectly lined animation, which means that they could do it really fast, and that's why they could do it that way.
It looks like a watercolor painting brought to life.
Yeah,
made a watercolor painting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But even the non-figure skating stuff, the animation is great.
Yeah,
I remember from the first episode when Yuri went back to his old training grounds and that girl was there watching him skate his first skate in like, what, 3 years or something like that, and she was just like sitting behind there freaking out like, oh, so good, you're amazing, like the way that was animated too, just to get the personality out of her face
yeah.
and everything was just really really charming. and encouraging.
This brings up a thought that I keep meaning to bring up, and it's the fact that apparently Yuri went to college in Detroit. And never once he got shot.
Not everybody lives in Detroit gets shot.
I have family who live in Detroit, Evan.
Me too. It's still funny.
Still funny.
My apologies, Detroit.
There's a lot of... There is a lot of...
I agree with the animation quality as a whole is really pretty consistent.
Hmm.
I mean, I think they definitely take shortcuts when the other skaters are skating, but if it's, like, someone important, they usually do a better job.
Yeah, like, right. The Thai skater, he definitely got a full budget on that. Yeah. Yuri always obviously gets a full, well, both the Yuris obviously get a full yes. budget. Kind of on the Swiss skater, not so much on the Russian skater.
Or the American.
Oh, the American was just right out.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't even show him skate, really. They just said, oh, he got bad scores.
Who cares?
Too bad. Yeah. Which I was kind of happy about because I wasn't looking forward to watching another. Like, honestly, sometimes in the show, I say the one downfall is that sometimes watching the routines get a little tiresome.
You don't need to see everyone who's competing's routines.
Just the important people.
Yeah. But they do. And... You know, and eventually, you know, because it's a competition, you know some of these people are going to get knocked out, and you know that Yuri's not going to be one of them. So, like, show Yuri's, that's fine. And or even you know what, even because Yuri's a main character, show his skate the first time that he does something. You know, the first time he does a routine, show his skate, but then... Like, for the last episode that just came out, they showed his entire skate again just so that they could show him do Victor's special move at the end. And I was like, well, you know, you probably could have skipped that with some inner monologue from Victor and then cut back to the skate. And it's like, oh, it's towards the end of his skate, you know. But then, like, there was one point where I thought that his skate was going to end. It's like, no, this is just the bridge, the halfway point between his routine. And I was like, oh, geez, you know, And I think the reason why I'm so bummed out about that is because you miss so much story in just a 23-minute episode. It's like, they show the skating, and it's like, well, I have to watch this whole routine, and I'm going to miss out on all this story that they're just going to show in the next episode, but I don't want to wait a whole week for more story. I want to know what happens, you know?
Yeah.
I think and it's not just this show. It's also the same thing with idol shows, and you see a concert, and it's like, don't sing the whole song, damn it. You know, I don't care how well you're dancing or how well the 3D looks, you know, or there was another example that I had too. Some other third reason because of rule of thirds. I don't know. But I think that that's my issue with these kinds of shows is that it's like, don't show the whole routine, please. But otherwise, I love the show. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I've been a fan of Sayo Yamamoto since Michiko Ehachin. And I did like some of the aspects of when she did Lupin the Third, The Woman Called Fuchiko Mine. But I feel like this is the anime that's going to actually put her like on top tier as one of the absolute best.
Yeah, I will say that that Fuchiko Mine did have some great animation, but that also had a lot to do with the fact that Takashi Koike was her animation director.
That too. So... Are we all in agreement? Yuri on Ice is a must-watch for the fall.
Yes, must-watch Yaoi on Ice.
Yes. Yaoi on Fire.
Yes, we joked about the show, we laughed at its title, but we can't stop watching it. It is that
and
good.
And in the end, I'm the one who goes home the winner.
okay.
You can't deny that.
Yes, we can't. All right, I feel like we need something manly to play in order to get the sparkles off of us from talking about that show. So, we're going to spin the end theme to season one of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which is now airing on Toonami and has, I think, a really great English dub with some talented actors for Dio, Jonathan, and Speedwagon. Have you been watching the dub at all?
A little bit of it. Not the whole thing, but I have caught a little bit of it.
Okay, but...
It's good.
Yeah, it's good. So, this is the single version of the classic song from Yes. So, if you want the full version, please buy their 1971 album, Fragile. This is Roundabout, to be continued.
探してる。操作線は藪の中、キラキラ光る意志は磨かなきゃ。孵化してくだけ。もうブギウギはならない、鼓動が波まで膨らますな、熱になる言葉にならない、予感渦巻いて胸が騒ぎ出す、夏が色めき出す。青春群像劇には光のないはずなのに、まるでギミック取り越してそう同意して、身を揺らせ楽しんでさ、イマジャージーでファニーな即興な聖者、ここに始まる君と私とでファンタスティック、一度きりだけのポイントシュガーとスパイス、ごちゃ混ぜにジャイブして、まだ止めないです、やだこれからが最弱って、神様のシナリオ超えて走り出してく、ロラなんだかんだ Do you understand?クラクラさせる月に何もかも思い通りになる、変わってくリアライズ、整合性とかいらない、願うまま、あるがまま、そんな何がどうでこうで取らずで乗って不遂だわ、聞かないでさ、俺さにいでバニーなテンションだライド、私とのドラスティー出会いこそ道のサンデリー、ビターとスイート、唇でシェイクして、もう気づいてるシューティングスター、瞬く間好きさあってく、大人になる前に交わす約束はきっと、
sugar rush just listening to that. Checkmate by Michi, which served as the opening theme to this spring's Dagashikashi. Saya is best girl, by the way. Speaking of snacks, Jonathan, how's editing going for the one we shot at AAC?
AAC, that one is still on my camera, but I promise that one will come out eventually.
I know they'll all come out eventually.
There is too much good stuff going on in that video that it cannot just stay in the archives. No way. it's the first video where we've ever had people spit stuff out, and it happened four times.
Yes, I know. Wow. I was there. That was a very fun one, though.
It was good.
All right.
Store-bought mochi. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I like big butts, and I cannot lie. And these other anime reviewers, they can't deny. For when a girl walks in with an itty-bitty waist, when you got that round thing in her face, you get smacked. And sometimes you get knocked out of the ring. Especially if you're in the sport known as Keijo!
Yeah, yeah, you really got to put the emphasis on there, because this one is the one that brings the most exclamation points to the game. Eight, as a matter of fact,
yes,
in the regular
yes.
title.
And it is true that if you do not put all eight of those exclamation points in your tweet, Crunchyroll will come down and serve a can of whoop-ass.
Is that real?
they've tweeted about it on their I thought it was really funny.
Oh, yeah, so
wasting so many characters on Twitter for that.
I know.
Yeah, but it's worth it. You need it.
But everybody is okay, so apparently, like, it's Keijo and Yuri on Ice for, like, which is, like, the most watched program in North America, in Canada, and in Europe. It's, like, one of these two. Sometimes it might also be Drifters or Kiss and Not Me. But for the most part, it's, like, Yuri on Ice versus Keijo. Two sports shows that have, like, two completely opposite sorts of, like, personalities, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, they're on yes. two completely opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
Yeah.
So for
Urine on Ice is like actually serious and thoughtful, and Keijo is a parody.
Yeah, but except for the director coming out and saying, "No, I want this to be taken seriously." Like, and then you watch the show and you say, "That's just not going to happen."
Yeah, yeah.
Can I ask, how often do you guys make fart noises when you're with your mouth as you watch Keijo? Because it's like every time, like, you see a movement, it's like. Especially when you see, like, that wave of power coming off of their butt.
Can I just say, the show is just straight up awful. Like, I had, at the beginning of this season, I had such high hopes. If you listen to the beginning of our winter previews, like, we are so psyched on our Wicked Anime Podcast. We are so psyched for Keijo to come out. Now it's just like, oh guys, Keijo, come on, this sucks. Like, and
I love it.
I'm so disappointed.
Why are you okay?
I love it. It's so good because it's such a parody of itself.
There's no strategy involved. I thought that we were going to get, like, when the director came out and was like, no, I want this to be taken seriously, I wasn't expecting superpowers. I was expecting, like, legit strategy. And then in the one episode that completely took me out of the game for it was the hypno boobs. Like, once that happened, I was like, I am done with this show.
But think about all the other sports anime that has done this, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's why it's such a good parody of its own genre, because sports anime does that.
I know that, and that's the whole thing. Is like, I love iShield 21 so much, and it does the same thing, but it's still based in a little bit of reality. Like, the fact that the main character in iShield 21 can do the Devil Bat Ghost, which is a legit rushing technique when you're rushing the football. It's just that they put a little bit of spunk on it is fine with me. But in Keijo, when you have a monster that lives inside your ass cheeks that is like a demon that possesses you and pulls you around the ring at super speeds is not okay. Like, that just completely pulls you out of the animation altogether.
Yeah. And I fucking love it. Every single episode, I'm like, it never disappoints me. It always gets more ridiculous. It always goes further than I think it will ever dare to, and I fucking love that.
And what I'm in Sarah's boat here. I'm sorry, Jonathan. Like, when this show first came on, like, I was talking to Jonathan and Andrew about why I like the show, and is that, like what the director said, they take the subject seriously. It's like with, I know as a director, you've told me that you don't like Jonathan, but with the movie Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, the movie isn't, hey, look at me, I'm Abraham Lincoln, I'm killing vampires, ho ho ho. No, it takes that subject and aspect and treats it as if it's the real thing, and it treats it seriously. That's why I like Keijo, is because it takes something so stupid, but all the everyone treats it as if it is, like, straight up the real deal.
And you know something? Honestly, that should put me on board with it. It really should. But for whatever reason, it doesn't. Like, for the same thing for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, I was legitimately excited for it when it came out, and then I actually, the first time I saw it was on HBO, which I'm glad I did, because I didn't want to pay for a movie ticket with it after I saw it. But it's like the same thing. I don't know why I can't get behind it, because I should. Honestly, my personality says that I should get behind these shows, but I totally can't. I don't know. Like, I want to enjoy Keijo so much. I want to love it. I even, like, Andrew and I even mutually agree that Rin is the best girl. No, like, hands down.
No, I have Hanabi as best girl.
And, like, I don't know. I just, I can't get behind the show.
So you can't get behind Sayaka's behind.
Yes. Yes. Pun intended.
See, the thing is that for me is that I understand that Keijo is so ridiculous because it's just putting superpowers into boobs and butts. But, you know, I like to watch those types of shows where it's like, just superpower type tournament style. Like, it's kind of almost a throwback to Dragon Ball.
Yes.
And Dragon Ball Z.
I was about to bring that up.
And I think that especially that they're hinting at the opposing team from the other school in the most recent episode, that there's going to be a lot more of that. So I think I'm just going to love it even more. And yeah, I'm really, really happy about that.
That's a part of establishing a universe, though, is that when you watch Dragon Ball, you know that there are aliens from another world that go to these foreign planets that have superpowers and they can use them. That's fine. But like, when you establish Keijo, you're assuming that we're living in the real world. And it's never established that people have the ability to have superpowers and to do all these sorts of things. That's why it's so off-putting, is because it works two different ways. Either people can let go and accept it, like you guys can, or you're stuck like a curmudgeon like me when it comes to stories, and they set up this universe that has no established superpowers in it. Like, if they had My Hero Academia, if it was set up in a world like that, if you told me that it was set up in the same universe as that, great. Keijo was amazing. But they didn't. They said that it's just in the regular world, in an alternate reality Japan that just has this sport. That's it. No superpowers. And that's where it leaves me saying, well, why are there superpowers?
Well, it's not just Japan that has a sport. They make a mention in a previous episode that Japan only has two different teams, and the other teams are all around the world.
Right. Yeah, I'm just saying that the summary of the show says, like, alternate universe Japan where this exists.
Oh, okay. All right.
Like, that's where it's taking place. But,
I guess I'm just thinking more that, like, because I have seen so many sports anime now, like, there's just, I know a lot of sports anime that do that, where they have superpower-like powers, but they're normal, and they never really explain how they get them. That happens in Kuroko no Basuke all the time.
It happens in Tiger Mask.
I wouldn't watch Kuroko no Basuke for the same reason. It's just so ridiculous. Like, for Eye Shield, there's explanations for some of the stuff that they do. Not all of it, but some of it. So I'm okay with it. But, like,
well, there's explanations for how they have their superpowers, but some of them are just a little bit too make-believe.
Yeah, same with Captain Tsubasa, too. Like,
even Prince of Tennis.
But nobody watches soccer. Even Prince of Tennis, too? Yeah.
Yeah, Prince of Tennis does it, too. One of the shows that we'll be talking about in the next segment, I'm going to assume, does it as well.
It depends on which one we're talking about next time.
It's the one about volleyball.
No!
Haikyuu doesn't really do that, no.
Haikyuu doesn't do it at all. Haikyuu is actually 100% grounded in reality.
But there are characters on that show that I feel like have, like, these supernatural abilities to predict where these people are gonna be. Like, the strategy...
But that's, like, as they say, it's like read blocking, you know? You're using your intuition.
Everything's legit, and the same thing with, like, the Iron Wall team. All legit. They're just super tall, super strong guys. That's it, you know?
Okay. All right.
And even then, they weren't impenetrable.
Right, exactly, because they lost, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
All right. We'll be talking about Haikyuu in the next segment, but with Keijo. Let me ask you this, Jonathan.
Yep.
If Keijo was a video game, would you play it?
Yes, absolutely I would. Because in a video game, it's much easier to suspend reality. And the fact that you're actually getting involved with it and you're interacting, yeah, you could probably play that. But then again, it could also turn out just like Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball, where the butt bumping is just like, hit X, hit square, triangle. Oh, she fell off. I win. You know, like...
Yeah. Give us Dead or Alive Extreme 3 Koei Tecmo!
You can get it whenever you want. It's not region locked, and it has an English track on it, and you just buy it, you just import it.
I know. I'm just saying. Because they have the Keijo stuff on there now.
Yep, they do.
So it sounds like it's 2 out of 3 this time around who recommends this show.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I would say try it because, like, honestly, if somebody asked me, hey, should I watch Keijo? I was like, do you like filth? And sometimes for me, that answer's yes. And it's absolutely a guilty pleasure. Like, all through and through, this show is just 100% a guilty pleasure.
And I think if you don't have to watch beyond episode 1 to figure out if you're going to like it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, right.
If by the end of episode 1 you don't like it, then you're just not going to ever like it. If by the end of episode 1 you do like it, it's going to go up from there, probably.
Yeah, because it's true, because at the end of episode 1 I was like, uh-oh. Like honestly, my thought after it was, oh no, what's going to happen? And then, like, episode 2 came along, and that's when was episode 2 the one where they had to keep the beach ball up in the air?
Yes.
For a certain amount of volleys? That episode sucked. Come on. It's like...
It's such an excuse to see girls hitting things with their butts.
It is! It totally is. And sometimes, that's okay. Sometimes it's not. Devil New Sister. But...
Wait, which one?
New Devil Sister, whatever that one was last year.
Oh, one I absolutely hated.
Yeah, it was like one of the worst shows ever.
Yeah. But,
like, sometimes guilty pleasures work and sometimes they don't. And in this case, for me, it didn't. And it really sucks because I was so looking forward to it.
Don't you hate
when
that happens?
But I'm glad you like it. I'm really glad that you guys like it, though. Like, honestly, I really
honestly,
yeah,
I haven't...
It's definitely guilty pleasure.
Yeah, it is a guilty pleasure. It's not smart, but I like the fact that it tries to make itself look smart when it really isn't.
Yeah, I was just hoping for more strategy, more bump strategy.
Well,
yeah,
if you
I
want
know.
That, we're gonna have to get to the next anime.
Yeah, we are. We really are.
Yeah, we will get to the next anime right after we play the next song, and it is the opening theme to Keijo with Apex. This is Ari with the song Dream Scramble.
Yeah.
vibe of that song. The opening theme to this past spring's On Happy, that was the cast of the show under the name Happy Clover performing the opening theme Punch Mine Happiness. The anime was kind of meh, but it had its moments, and the theme songs were definitely bright spots of the show. So now we're going to be talking about a show that Jonathan and I are still eating our words after we made fun of Sarah for liking this show.
Yes! One of my greatest achievements ever was like convincing you guys to just finally sit down and watch Haikyuu. Yes.
Oh yeah, I just turned on randomly turned on the first episode one day, and then I marathoned it. I really did.
Same thing. Like I remember watching like the first season of it, and I like marathoned through like 13 episodes in one day, and then the 12 the next day. I'm like, wait, it's over? I want more. God damn it, I want more.
Yeah, that's what happens when you take my opinions for granted. That's okay, because you're fans now, and that's all I could have ever asked for.
Can I say that I'm liking how they have been doing the show? Like the from a production standpoint, they did 25 episodes for season one, then they took a break, then they came back 6 months later, did another 25 episodes, then they took another break. And now they're back for these 10 final episodes, possibly final episodes. We don't know what's going to be happening after this whole arc. But I'm liking that anime companies...
You guys don't, but I do.
Yes, I know you probably do. But what I like is that anime companies are realizing, hey, maybe we shouldn't be trying to do one episode a week for all eternity, like Naruto and One Piece have been doing.
Well, I also think at the beginning that they didn't realize that first season... exactly how successful it would be, because it was only after the first season aired that the manga started like really rocketing to the top of the manga sales charts.
Yeah.
And I think that they were like, maybe we should, you know, take our time with it because people seem to really freaking like it.
Yeah, I feel like, do you think that this wasn't one of those anime that took the benefit of having an outside, out of Japan audience? Like, they knew, like, there was a big following outside of Japan for Haikyuu.
I don't think they knew initially. I think that because people who really liked Free wanted something else, and Haikyuu had just enough stylistically there to give that to them, and then also had its own completely different but wonderful story and cast of characters, that it just made people fall in love.
Mm. Yeah. I agree.
That's what happened to me.
I love that I'm learning about volleyball in this.
Me
watching
too.
This show.
I always just thought that playing volleyball was just you just hit the ball over the net and hope that the ball was on the ground on the other side. I always thought that was all that you needed to know about volleyball.
Yeah.
You know, being back in a school system for my new job, I'm now recently learning how freaking popular volleyball actually is as a school sport. Like, it is unbelievably popular in any school system that you go to.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's something that you can practice inside all year round, you know, and they're all in high school, so some of them aren't gonna be tall, so it allows the short players a chance.
Mm-hmm. Like yep. Hinata.
Like Hinata.
So what I'm liking about this third season is just the intensity of this championship. You're watching as Karusuno and Shiratori Izawa are just going back and forth, and they're pushing their bodies as hard as they can to gain that victory. And the importance of the victory is very apparent throughout this entire season. Like, it feels like it's that make or break aspect for both Karusuno and Shiratori Izawa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to say, is that really a good decision for this season? Like, that was the one thing that I had in mind when starting this season was, are they really going to be successful this season by just doing one volleyball match for how many episodes did you say this season
episodes.
Was? I can't believe it's that short either. But yeah, that's really my question is like,
because the manga is getting it's they're trying, they can't catch up anymore. Beyond that.
Right. They're Dragon Ball seeing it. They're like basically this entire season is a power up episode.
No, it's not that. It's just that they're not dragging anything out, but they don't want to if they this like ends the main arc. And they could go ahead with more story. There's enough story there, but they don't have enough story to finish that arc. So they're just waiting.
So what you're saying is they're just going to give us a really short season to wrap up this final arc, and then like the next season, like season four, is going to start something completely new from scratch?
Not completely new from scratch, because you and there's like spoilers involved. But if you think about it, I know that everyone's I'm not gonna spoil anything. But you know how Shira Torizawa, they're like making Shira Torizawa to be like their ultimate enemy, and I think that's where that your concern is coming from, because it feels like they're the final boss, right?
No, my concern is just the fact that they're choosing to do one volleyball game for one entire season of a show.
Okay. Like, yeah, I think it's just because the this match is just important, and that's why.
That's what I was thinking, too, that the high importance of this battle between Karasuno and Shira Torizawa. I mean, for them to do it just 10 episodes, imagine, it's good that I feel like that they're doing just 10 instead of dragging out 5 games over 24 or 25 episodes. See, that would be painful to watch, in my opinion. But the fact that they're doing just 10 episodes, it shows that they're not just taking their time, but they're not wasting the viewer's time.
Right, but that's the whole thing, is that if it was going to be a 25-episode season again, then obviously it wouldn't last for the entire season. Like, Andrew and I thought this was a 13-episode season, so we thought that the match was going to end at episode 10, their volleyball match would be over, and that way they have 3 episodes to do some an epilogue for the season, you know. But
well, because the epilogue is the epilogue part of it would be them prepping for whatever next match is going to happen,
which you know what it is.
Yeah, well, I know where it's going to.
Yeah, and I think I know what it is too. But
because I know, and that's the thing that why I mentioned about, you know, and you said that you weren't thinking that, which cool. But I think that there are some people thinking that Shira Torizawa is like the last match, but and is like is Karasuno's greatest rival and always has been. But their number one rival has and always will be Nekoma. So eventually, they have to play that match. They haven't even gotten to that part in the manga yet.
Oh, right. Okay. And that's what I knew. Like, I knew that Nekogama was the goal. Like, I've always known that, just because of the basic story, structure of storytelling, you can just tell from the beginning. It's like, oh, they have to fight those guys because, you know, they have to.
Yeah.
And, like, if you think about it in the perspective of things, the guys that they're playing right now are just like a drop in the water bucket compared to how their rivalry to Nekoma, which is the reason why I'm wondering they're spending so much time on this volleyball match this season. Because the only thing that really set up this whole thing was that one dude who can spike real good, you know. And yeah, maybe he's a scary guy, and yeah, maybe he'll be on an Olympic volleyball team one day. But, I mean, is that one guy really the thing that they've been setting up for the entirety of Season 2 so they could do an entire season of one volleyball match for season
3? He does have a little bit of that final boss quality to him, but I do understand where you're coming from in regards to that. Like, one man can't... And I feel like that's the thing that Haikyuu has been teaching throughout the past 2 seasons, and even into this one. One man can't hold an entire team.
Right, which I think is where they're kind of faulty in this season, because there's really only like 3 guys on this other team that are really a threat. That red-haired guy who I've always found really annoying since the beginning of the season, the guy who spikes real good, who they've been setting up since the beginning of season 2, who I also find is kind of an annoying chump, and then, I don't know, maybe the blonde-haired guy, or the brown, like, brownish-blonde-haired guy. Like
the setter.
The setter.
Yeah. Like, maybe him, you know? But other than that, who really else on the other team is really that big of a threat to make them truly a final boss team?
Well, my honest opinion...
Keep in mind, I am loving this season. I am just playing really hardball devil's advocate right now.
Right. I'm thinking that they're doing this for Shira Torizawa because they want to show, like, okay, we've been teaching Karasuno, and we've been teaching our viewers the importance of teamwork and that every person on the team is very important. But what happens if we were to bring on a team that went the complete opposite direction with that? What happens when you find a team that has the 3-1-2 or 3 players that legitimately holds up the team and actually brings that team towards more championships than the rest of the teammates from that team.
Okay, that's a very, very fair point, Evan. Yeah, I actually...
They mentioned that in the episode itself. The coach was like, we have completely different play styles.
Yeah, they yes. did. But they didn't like dive into what their play styles were, though.
So I mean, like... they did say that Carrasno focuses heavily on the team play. So if their play styles are completely different, that's the implication that Shiro Torizawa isn't really about team play.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah, that's a very fair point. And
I
mean, like,
because I love Haikyuu.
No, and really, honestly, don't get me wrong. I love this season. I am loving every single episode of this show still, and I love Haikyuu, and everybody should watch it, especially when this season is over. You can recommend it to people. Hey, yeah. Watch this entire show. But for me, the problem that I've always had with every sports anime ever, even when like Eye Shield was still coming out, like every sports anime ever is the worst when you have to wait week by week or month in some cases when you're just waiting for a damn game to end. You know?
And it's called Dragon Ball Syndrome, okay?
Yeah, it is. It is Dragon Ball Syndrome. That's what I mean. It's the charge-up episode. But
I would like to give a special shout-out to the first season of Yaomushi Petal, which ends on the biggest cliffhanger ever, and the second season didn't come out until, like, months after that.
Oh, fuck you, Yaomushi Petal. I mean, you can kind of think of that in the same way with season 2 ended with them going up against this huge team, this powerhouse team, and we didn't even get to see it until now.
Right.
Yeah. But the thing is, with Yaomushi, it was like they had a 3-day race, so they raced like once every day, and on the second day, they literally cut the end of the episode before they hit the finish line, so you didn't figure out who won.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the level that Yaomushi Petal went to, and I was like, that's not nice.
Now, going back to what we were talking about, comparing the two teams, I see Karasuna High as, like, an entire team of people, if we're going, like, RPG levels, an entire team of, like, level 18 players. They're really good, and they're all equally good. And then you look at Shiro Torizawa, and they have, let's say, like, most of the players on there are level 13, but then they've got the 1, 2, 3 players that are, like, level 30.
Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing when I'm watching this season.
But I also think that there are, because there are some of the, it also comes down, if we're going to the RPG metaphor, that some of the team members have different strengths that counterbalance the overwhelming power of the other team. Like, you know, Suki's really good at defending, and then Hinata can get lots of really weird spikes in, and stuff like that. So I think that some of them have higher skill levels than each other in certain areas.
Yeah.
But I feel like every player has their own unique style that one other player can't do on the team.
And I think that's the reason why we like watching Karasuno play so much, is because we've learned to... We saw them learn how to work with each other because they're so different. And it's hard to get behind a team like Shiro Torizawa to... if I even said that right.
Shiro Torizawa.
Because we don't know anything about them. Like honestly, they've been brought up to be these wicked big bad guys, and the only reason why we know that they're bad guys is because we were told, hey, they're bad guys. And hey, by the way, they're really good. You know, but we don't know that. We know that Nekoma is a really good team because we've seen them play. And we can't wait for that fight because we know how their team works and they got to know them. But for Shiro Torizawa, We don't know anything about them. We've literally only seen the guy who spikes real good, and that's it. So it's hard to see some, for some people it's really hard to see him as a true enemy, which I think is it still goes back to my problem, is that why is this match going to take the whole season? Watch Haikyuu, everybody. Please watch the show.
You know, Haikyuu is one of those shows that I would recommend any like coach And it could be any sport. Any sports coach, whether it be baseball, football, volleyball, hockey, which I actually, we forgot to mention when we were talking about Yuri on Ice. For the love of God, give us a hockey anime now.
Yeah, please.
But I feel like with Haikyuu, you can show this to any sports team, no matter what sport. And I feel like you can educate your students, your fellow teammates, about the importance of teamwork. Despite it being a very entertaining series, it's also very educational.
No, it's true. It's very true.
Yeah, I learn a lot.
Yes, Haikyuu, please watch it. You can see it on Crunchyroll, and it's been licensed by Sentai Filmworks.
Yes, and I still don't understand why they haven't dubbed it yet, but I'll never understand Sentai Filmworks in anything that they do.
They will always be better than Aniplex.
True, yes. True.
At least their stuff is affordable.
Yeah.
And their dubs don't suck sometimes.
It's a flip of the coin sometimes, but I love the folks at Sentai Filmworks. They love me too, or they at least love Michael Corleone plushie.
Well, you know what I really am loving about Haikyuu Season 3 right before we move on? Mm-hmm. I love the opening, even though it isn't Spire.
Oh, really? Because I actually love the closing the best. I actually think the closing really? Is one of the best. It's one of the best songs of the season.
Yeah. Oh, the Nico Texas the Wall one.
Yep.
Okay.
I love the closing too. I always love whatever music they have for Haikyuu. Mm-hmm. But I always have a special attachment to the Haikyuu openings because they're so motivating. It's so easy to listen to one and feel instantly like motivated to do everything. And even though it's not Spire, I still think it has that same feel to it. So I'm just very happy about that.
Well, coincidence, because we are going to be spinning that song next.
Yes, we're going to be spinning the theme song to Haikyuu Season 2, which
Season 3.
Season 3! Fuck! So we're going to spin the theme song to Haikyuu Season 3, which comes from Burnout Syndrome's latest album, Lemon, and it is called Hikari Are.
Oh, no. 曲がらずくせずりそう追い続けるその覚悟光と呼ぼう光あれゆけ闇を仮想にして己の道を経験に行こう光あれいすん先の絶望へいすん先の栄光を信じて
That was Lenny Code Fiction with their recent single Flower, which serves as the opening theme to the rugby anime All Out. I know nothing about this anime, so Jonathan, take the wheel.
All Out is probably the hardest hitting sports anime that you'll see this season.
Is it, dare I say, manime?
It kind of is, in a sense, but it's not 100% there. There are most certainly some characters that are manime characters, but some of the characters are simply not. It's in the same respect as iShield 21, which I talked about earlier in the show. iShield 21 is the best anime to compare it to, because you have a lot of characters who are nearly exactly the same. It's really interesting because the show takes so many different twists and turns from, like, now until episode, I think, or the beginning to until episode, I think, 7 is what we're on right now. And the show has already changed up so much from the first couple episodes. But this is another show that really doesn't have any superpower aspects to it, you know, in the sense that iShield 21 does. It has a lot to do with character archetypes in that comparison. But it's all based on legit skill. One of the things that they've done to change up the season already is they brought in a coach. They hired on a coach who is like a rugby fanatic, and or not a fanatic, but he was just like really good back in the day when he played rugby. And he basically comes in and tells the entire team, "Hey, man, you guys suck." And then he runs them ragged through Golden Week, which is now where we are in the show, and it's gotten exponentially better than
that's
what it
good.
Is.
After that's good, because I, as I said, I only managed 2.5 episodes in, and I just didn't end up finishing that third episode. But I was like, oh, I don't know, it's kind of...
Yeah, it's really hard to push through. I will admit, it's really hard to push through some of the first couple episodes. I mean, because some of the characters in the show are really off-putting. Like, the really tall guy, the guy who they call...
Yeah.
I really don't like him.
So the thing was, in the first episode, they go through his whole trauma thing about not being able to play rugby, but then they, like, fix it by the end of the episode because he's friends with Gyeon-kun now, so I thought, okay, that's the end of that, but then they brought it back in episode 3 when they're playing against the other team and he's, like, you know, can't tackle them or anything like that. I'm like, I thought we already dealt with this.
Yeah,
is it
I thought
still
we were,
an
yeah.
issue? Like, come on.
Yeah, and after that, I don't think it is anymore. I think I think he's just kind of like that. He's got that wimpy exterior, but it would be his interior, wouldn't it? I don't know, because his exterior is certainly not wimpy. Anyways, that's really philosophical, and I can't really figure that one out right now. But some of the characters are in the show are really weird at first, and you kind of have to get used to them. They don't really have that same mesh that iShield 21 did when you first meet all these characters. It's like, oh wow, this is like a really weird Dick Tracy kind of grouping of characters where they're all really interesting and different, but this one, they're all sort of drawn in this super hyper realistic way that you can't tell right off the bat that they all have this certain skill set or like, I mean, again, the same problem that you have with the opposing team in Haikyuu is you have no idea who most of the characters are in this. Like, there's only like 3 characters who we're actually focusing on in this show. But for some reason, I really wanted to hang on to it, and I think it was because the reason why I wanted to hang on to the show was because it's like, wow, we have another obscure sports anime as rugby. I mean, who knew that Japan even knew anything about rugby, right?
I know.
And now we got it. And as it turns out in the show, they know a lot about it. Like, it's and, like, the detail that they go into in rugby is really good. And I'm just shocked because rugby is like an Eastern European style sport.
Right. Like, this and, is like, it's really popular over in the UK and in that vicinity.
Yeah, UK, Ireland, I think I think Hawaii too is, and that might be its connection to Japan, is because Japan really likes Hawaii, and I think Hawaii really likes rugby. So,
there is a historical aspect of, like, Japanese people were the first people to go over to Hawaii before other foreigners went over to Hawaii.
Hey, this is ours now, America. but rugby is such an obscure sport that I want to support it in the way that I hope that Japan keeps making obscure sport shows, in the same way that we have a lot of ping pong now going through our anime circuit. Like ping pong lesbians this season.
Scorching Ping Pong Girls. That show has surprised
me. There was ping pong before this ping pong one.
Yeah. There was, but this one's obscure. You know, like... Ping Pong the animation was weird too, but and also if really dating far back to like the late 90s Ping Pong Club.
Oh, that filthy show!
Don't even get me started on that one. But it's not about ping pong right now. It's about rugby. I just like seeing the obscure sports shows coming up because I'll always be willing to give them a shot. And there's something really odd and hypnotic about All Out because I want to keep watching it. It's honestly not the best show this season, but it is one that I keep going back to watch. And honestly, the game, Sarah, that you're watching right now is still the only game that they've played in the season.
Really?
They've done skirmishes and scrimmages, but everything else has been training so far. Yeah. Wow, right? Yeah.
Not even like practice matches or anything like that?
No, they've done skrimmages and skirmishes. They actually just did one, and it really changed some of the character dynamics about it. And I think the reason why the show is going so well is because you really have to like sports, like sports in order to like this anime. And I think that's probably a problem for a lot of us anime fans and otaku. Because a lot of in nerd culture, not a lot of us do like sports ball, but I always like sports ball, and the rugby sports ball is interesting to me, so I keep watching it. So,
okay, yes,
Sarah, you said that you haven't really liked it, like you've given it a shot, but you haven't really latched onto it. What was it in the first place that you really wanted to know about it? Or, like, why did you want to see it in the beginning?
Well, because I like to give sports anime a chance, because I never used to do that ever. And so I feel bad whenever I just, like, outright reject it just because it's a sports anime. Like, what if I really get attached to the characters or the plot or something like that? So I always try to give them a chance.
Yeah, and going into this, I knew that rugby was going to be a tough sell. because it's such an obscure sport, I think they legitimately were trying to hit the anime crowd with it. You can tell that through the animation. It almost has that kind of quality of the good David Animation Studios style, like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. The captain of the rugby team is built like Jotaro Kujo or Kenshiro from Fist of the North Star. And he even gets that evil aura about him, like that red smoke that comes off of his body every time he gets serious. And that is a anime tactic.
That's why I asked. I'm like, I bet you really there was like a lot of like cross appreciation for
yes. It. Yeah, and that's absolutely true because it does have that. But I don't think it reaches its full potential only because the show is not quite perfect, you know? Like, there's still some flaws in it. And I think the reason why they haven't done so many games, like, you can go to games because people generally get volleyball in Haikyuu. And in iShield 21, you can play a lot of games because people generally know how to play football.
Rugby is a really complicated sport.
Yeah, rugby is super complicated, as it seems. And I think that's why they haven't played so many games, is because you can play a game and you can, like, oh, wow, look at that tackle that they did. That's great. But I don't know how they're playing the game.
They're just pushing each other back and forth, and the ball came out. And he's trying to go around, and now they're pushing each other again. And it's just nonstop pushing.
Yeah, and rugby is a very close quarters sport. You do a lot of grabbing and touching of other dudes in this sport too. So just want to throw that out there.
How are you not watching this, Sarah, then?
Sarah.
Yes, because that's always what determines whether or not I'm going to ship it.
Is there enough touching and grabbing? Nah.
Well, have you ever seen the way that you form a scrum in rugby? Like, you legitimately have, like, one person in the back end of the wall has to grab under in between the legs of another, the two dudes in front of them, and then pull on their shirts.
It's so like that... oil wrestling all over again.
Yeah, you legitimately have to goose the other people in front of you in order to hold the scrum together. It's just such a weird brotherhood sport. I like it. It's a good show. But it's not great, but it's a good show.
I'm sorry, but when you said brotherhood, I just imagined Edward and Alphonse from Full Metal Alchemist playing rugby and then just, like, eliminating everybody on the opposite team.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of... When I say brotherhood sport, that's kind of what it is. You kind of seek vengeance out for your teammates. Hockey is a brotherhood sport.
Yes.
Like, if somebody does one of your teammates wrong, you're going to do wrong to that other teammate. Or you're going to do wrong to the other team. Same thing with rugby. You know, if you know, you have to, you really have to work together in order to get through this. Volleyball is kind of a brotherhood sport, but you don't actually make contact with people on the other side of the net, so it doesn't really go to fruition. But you always have to know your team to a T.
Yeah.
So
let us reiterate: give us hockey anime now.
Give us a hockey anime. That's all. The takeaway from watching All Out is give me a hockey anime.
The Tokyo 2020 Olympics are going to be very interesting. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait.
That's what I'm saving up for in 2020. That's why I'm going to Tokyo.
Really? You're going to brave that?
Yeah.
That sounds like there's going to be a lot of people there.
Yeah, look, that's what I did in London when I went to the London Olympics.
Yeah.
And I want to do it again, and I want to go to Japan anyway. So it's a perfect time limit to set myself to save up for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Although it's going to be mad expensive.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm already budgeting, like, too much money for it.
Jonathan, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me here for episode 150 of No Borders, No Race. Why don't you guys do some shameless plugging? And Sarah, why don't you go first?
Okay, so if you want to see all of my shit, you can Google 42 Believer, and my Twitter pops up, my Facebook, my YouTube channel, my Tumblr, whatever you care to follow me on. I use Twitter the most often. And as I mentioned earlier, if you want to watch any of the shows that we discuss during this episode, you can go to crunchyroll.com/42believer and get a free trial of their premium services. And their premium services only get better by the day, so... act now.
Wow.
Wow, yeah. So, what are you working on next for 42's anime reviews?
Well, I'm really excited for the Thanksgiving break because I'm gonna try and script more things. And I've got lots of ideas and experimental things to try for my channel, so please look forward to them.
Hooray! And Jonathan, your turn.
Yes. So, if you guys want to join in on the conversation, if you have a contribution to make, you can email us at wickedanimereviews@gmail.com, and that's all one word, wickedanimereviews@gmail.com, and we can talk about your fan service on the show, and we'll talk about the questions that you have. You can also find us on Facebook, where you can message us there too. That's facebook.com/wickedanime, and... you can find all of our cool stuff there, all of our fun that we like posting from around the net, and our podcast will be posted there too, which, if you want to listen to our podcast, you can go to nerdyshow.com/wickedanime, where you also find our videos, and we're also on iTunes, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play. If you have a place to find podcasts, we're probably there. Our videos you can find on youtube.com/wickedanimereviews, and that's like the main hub of Wicked Anime. So please check us out there. Give us some Sabscrabs, because we like Sabscrabs. Let's see. What else do we have? Well, yeah, we're on Twitter at YoWickedAnime if you want to tweet at us. And we're also on Tumblr sometimes if you want to see us post some stuff from the garbage heap of the internet. I think that's it. We also have a Twitch channel that we haven't used in a long time. That's Wicked Anna Play. So... I think that's everything. Definitely check out nerdyshow.com/wickedanime. That's the most important thing. Now Andrew usually does a shameless plugging, so I don't really...
I know. But what's coming up on episode 101?
Oh, thank you for asking, Evan. On episode 101, you can hear me, Christine, Victoria, and James talk about our experience at Rhode Island Comic Con. We spent the entire weekend there. We met some super awesome people. Like, my favorite experience was I got to meet Doug Walker, the Nostalgia Critic from Channel Awesome. And, he was a really cool dude. I saw him host a panel with John Heater. He was a lot of fun to hang out with, too. We got interviews, and they're not going to be on the podcast, but we do have those coming out, and they'll probably be on our Facebook page. And we just talk about our experience and our fun times that we had at Rhode Island Comic Con. That's pretty much the entire episode. It's a short episode because we were coming off of episode 100, which was our main episode. If you haven't heard that, you should totally go listen to it. It's the best thing we've ever done. And then episode 102 will be a regularly scheduled program, Wicked Anime.
Yeah, because that's amazing. You have like three specials in a row from 99,
yeah, no, we really
100,
do.
And 101. And I know some of your listeners are like, when do the specials end? And I'm like, no. We begin with the specials, and then you go to Tokyo Scott Paradise Orchestra, then you go to Mighty Mighty Boss Zones, then you go to Five Iron Frenzy, then you go to Orta Skoban.
Wow! You just pulled a total 90s reference right out of the hat there, and that was amazing.
It was more of a Scott reference, but you're welcome.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. I love it.
So, oh yeah, I have to do my promo stuff too. So!
Yeah, it's your show, Evan.
For the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, or if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter at king_baby_duck, on the J-pop, anime, and video games amino pages at kingbabyduckesh, on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/omnistryinc. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbastardbrigade and facebook.com/landofesh. And don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smash Rook, and Nerdcrate. And I hope everyone's been enjoying the unboxing videos I've been doing. I just finished up a new one. I shall hopefully have another one for the following week, and then after that, I'm out of boxes to open.
You've been unboxing like a champ.
Yeah, it's been fun doing these videos. It feels good to be doing stuff on camera again.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to be ending today's episode with the end theme to one of our favorite shows of the fall. It was our pick for the Wicked Anime Must Watch for everybody. The one show that I was saying, I told you you were going to like it. And I feel like Sarah would have told the exact same thing, which was Kiss Him, Not Me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So good.
Yeah, so good, so funny. This is Rie Murakawa with Doki Doki no Kaze. So until next time, this is your King Baby Doc Evan Borgo.
Jonathan from Wicked Anime.
Sarah from 42 Believer.
Reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps. Oh, so close!
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Mari no ashiyoto. から流れる悩み事相談私のものみたいのリネスため息試されて
guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.